Welcome to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hochstrom, and I am crazy about cats and the people who care for them. I'm here every week with answers to your questions about living with your kitty. My number is 888-429-5471. I want to thank my sponsors. I've invited these companies to be here because I believe in them and use them myself. I hope you'll show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady Network. Stay tuned for Dr. Sue Ettinger on The Pet Cancer Vet right after this show. Cat Crazy is a production of Eight Paws LLC, which is solely responsible for its content. The number here again is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. I'd love to hear from you. My guest veterinarian co-host tonight to have back the wonderful Dr. Sally Foote. If you recall, she not only is a member of ABSAB, as it's known within the field, American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior Vets, which is a big deal. There's very few of them. It's hard to get those letters next to your name. She's also a certified feline behavior consultant. She loves cats and the people who care for them. Her OCAW Vet Clinic in Tuscola, Illinois is a wonderful place to visit, especially if you have a cat. They really love cats and treat them just right. Dr. Sally, great to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back.
And just in time, Dog Bite Prevention Week, month, which is it?
Dog Bite Prevention Week.
Week. It's, okay, yeah, so we better jump right on it before the week is over and somebody gets bit, as they like to say, or bitten, as we say in good grammar. It is cat crazy, but of course, lots of people that even have cats could get bitten by dogs, and a lot of people can get bitten by cats. You were talking before we went on the air about a local school that you gave a talk to because of Dog Bite Prevention Week. And, of course, children – well, not of course. You and I just happen to know that children are the number one recipients of dog bites. Talk a little bit about how the kids responded when you talked to them about being bitten.
I like to ask questions of my audience. So I ask the, kids how many of them, have a pet like dog, how many have ever been afraid or almost bitten by a dog, and many of them raised their hands. And after I gave the presentation about dogs, one boy just asked about cat bites, like, what do you do to keep a cat from biting you? And so I first thought, well, I'm going to ask the same question, how many of these kids have cats? And almost all the children raised their hand, and I was looking out at an audience of probably about 200 in our thing. And then I said, how many of you out there have either almost been bitten by a cat or, aren't sure, kind of afraid sometimes, not sure what to do around the cat so you won't get bitten? And I'd say at least 90% of those same children raised their hands.
Wow.
And so I said, all right, real quick, we're going to go over preventing cat bites. That's just as important as, preventing dog bites. So while the dogs are the ones that can send a lot of people, to the emergency room, and we won't even go into the stories about, plastic surgery, et cetera.
Right.
Cat bites are also an issue, and I wouldn't be too surprised if, over the course of a few years, this turns into just National Bite Prevention Week
because of the awareness, which
right.
People may not have been aware before. Well, one of the awarenesses that I had years ago when researching the Dog Bible and the Cat Bible was to discover that while a dog's bite, and we're talking about owned pets, let's talk about people who own pets, because we're not talking about a loose, crazed, rabid dog in a, in a backyard alley. I mean, those situations are kind of like out of a movie. But people's own dogs bite them, and people's children's own dogs bite them because of the children not having been taught, because the parents didn't know either how to read dog body language. So the dog was probably giving warning signs that he was uncomfortable, on the defensive, feeling trapped or cornered, feeling threatened, and if they didn't follow the other warnings, they could get bitten. But while those bites can, as you said, a lot of them are to the face because children are often at eye level with a dog, unless it's a teensy-tiny dog, then you have a lot of ankle injuries.
Yeah.
But the problem with dog bites, as I understand it, I had quite a few plastic surgeon friends in Los Angeles, one of whom actually put my own face back together after my very own beloved golden retriever in the middle of a seizure clamped onto the middle of my face because I, like a bloody idiot, decided to cradle her in my arms. She'd never had a seizure. I thought she was dying. I don't know. She looked like she was dying. And I wanted her to die in my arms. And instead, Yike. And he had been trained at the University of Chicago and had a terror of dogs for life that he never overcame. Uh-huh. I mean, my dogs were in another room when he came to our house for dinner. Because at the University of Chicago, a city, so I guess you have a lot more, I think, dog bites in a city, just, you know, more proximity of dogs and people. Most of the time, the nose was off. The person's nose was off. And that's because the dog tears with a bite and people pull back. So this really is not like how to minimize the plastic surgery when you get a bite. But I will say about anyone who's trying to break up a dog fight, which I probably is the number one dog bite reason, don't you think, Dr. Sally?
It's up there, probably about third. The most common is because people, and especially children, are getting around the dog, around like their food, around their bed, and the child or person does not think, they go to hug the dog. You know, they go to pet the dog while mm-hmm. they're sleeping, mm-hmm. and it startles them when they come awake, and they may bite for that reason, or the dog is actually guarding that resource, or feels trapped, as you said. So, but, you know, when two dogs fight, it's a very common way that people get bitten because the person sticks their hands in there, grabbing the dogs to separate them, and the dogs redirect the aggression on the human. A lot of times people say, oh, he won't bite me because he knows it's me. No, he doesn't know it's you.
That's right.
No, it's you. And secondly, when they're so frenzied up, any kind of a touch will just have them, you know, just turn to respond to that touch and continue to aggress on where that touch came from. It's just like, you know, two people slugging it out in a bar.
I knew you were going to say that. I was going to say it's like a bar fight where the adrenaline's flowing.
Exactly.
You'll hit anything that comes near you, that touches you, that spins you around.
Right.
The point is, if somehow any part of your flesh ever winds up in a dog's mouth, push towards it. Don't pull away from it. That sounds crazy, but that's how you minimize damage, because it's not just the external plastic surgery. There's a great deal of ripping and shredding and tearing of internal musculature, tendons, ligaments, veins, arteries. It's quite awful. But kitty cats have that mouth that, as I understand it from my vet and from my human doctor, the bacteria in the cat's mouth, when it bites, it doesn't have to be a ripping, shredding, brutal bite. It just has to break the skin, can send people to the emergency room as well with hugely swollen, infected, differently than dog bites, right?
Yeah, the cat bite is almost like the staple remover, you know what I mean, with those little sharp teeth on the top and the bottom, and it comes together very pointed and very precisely and very deeply, and that's exactly how the cat's jaw is, and their mouth is it's a bit different than the dog. So what the cat does is the cat's going to bite and bite very firmly and just be a deep puncture, and it's going to carry in with its bite the bacteria from that cat's mouth. And some of the strains of the bacteria from the cat tend to be very inflammatory, and it's very easy to get then a deep infection. You can get an infection from a dog bite too. It's just the strain of the bacteria just responds a little bit differently, and especially in some people that they'll get the shooting streaks up their arm and swelling, et cetera. And because it's almost like, you know, just this deep puncture, this very precise deep puncture, and the cat may go like chomp, chomp, chomp instead of chomp, tear, and pull, that you get multiple, you know, deep punctures, and they're getting deep in the muscle, deep in the you know, tendons of your, like, especially the hands.
Yes.
And This is where then it becomes very, very serious, because you're carrying in a deep infection, and now you've got to get on like IV antibiotics or open that up to drain it and get attention to that immediately. And that's kind of the difference between the dog and the cat bite.
It sort of sounds, you know, the way you describe it, like those punctures, it sort of is like stepping on a rusty nail in tetanus.
Exactly. Yeah.
It goes so deep in. And so we know that even if you've had a tetanus shot, I think the immunity lasts for 10 years, and you were to step on some rusty metal, you really need to go and be boosted. I mean, that's what they'll usually do for you in the emergency room.
Right.
So if a cat bites you, it's not sort of like wash your hands and think you can pour some peroxide. I think it's fair to say, Sally, if you have any doubts about how deep in it went, you really should go to either your doctor or to an emergency room. Because I was just thinking, Ellen, who designs and created Necco Flies, which is that really cool wand toy, the official toy of the show, which I think you also like and use in your feline behavior work.
Yeah.
Her kitties and her are family. I mean, they all just live every minute of every day together. And one of the cats, in a moment of arousal, bit her on the hand, and she didn't think too much of it. She had about a week of doctor visits and antibiotics, and this hand was useless. I mean, it was blown up like a balloon.
Yep.
I mean, even this is someone who's cat savvy, cat adorer, cat liver with her. So I think it's something really to point out to people that the dog bites are kind of the high drama, and the cat bite can really happen on the couch.
But right, it's something, that's true.
And what would be great to talk about is how that subtle body language that you were mentioning, how do we know? I want to give our number again. If any of you have a cat who's a biter and you have kids, we really need you to let Dr. Sally help you figure out how to protect yourself and those children. The cat is really only being a cat. It's not an evil cat or a bad cat. It's a cat being pushed beyond its limit. And we're going to, Dr. Sally and I will talk about what some of those triggers might be. But the number here to do that, to talk to us, is 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. We have a special friend of the show, Dr. Sally, Robin from Covered in Cat Hair, a most wonderful blog.
Yeah.
Robin, it's great to have you back, hon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but I am recovering from a Jell-O shot hangover.
Uh-oh, that sounds scary. I don't know if you've been on a binge ever since you lost Freddie. Sally, she has the most wonderful cat foster, cat rescue called Kittens. What's it called, Lovey? Kitten Inc.
Kitten Associates.
Kitten Associates, so cute.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, she's great. One of her bathrooms has a kitty cam, and she just dedicates her life to these cats and to find homes for them. And she lost one last week, Freddie, who they weren't sure if it was FIP. She went all over the place to get diagnosed, kind of hoped it was cancer, and he just went downhill fast. And it was a really sad day. Have you been doing Jell-O shots ever since?
No, I actually just got back from attending Blog Paws.
Oh, I see. Tell us a little about how that was. Sally and I are too busy to go. Good for you for going in our stead.
Well, I had to go because actually, speaking of Fred, I was a speaker doing a session about our Kitties for Kids program, which included a dedication to Fred, and how we can be part of Be the Change to make the world a better place for cats and dogs. So
nice.
I was there kind of a uplifting, inspirational speech, which ended in tears for everyone in the room.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, I don't know if I did a good job.
It's always good when you can get people to cry, Robin. It's cathartic, especially when it's around cats. It's sad if it has to be a cat who had to cross the Rainbow Bridge, but still. Have you dealt with any cat biting issues with any of your fosters? Do you take any in that have that little bit of feral in them where they go after you, much to your surprise?
Absolutely. We took in a cat whose name's Doodlebug, and I didn't know it at the time, but he had been, he was only 4 months old at the time, but he had been abused by the previous family who had him, and as a result, he would attack our hands and arms and legs without any provocation whatsoever. Even if it had nothing to do with him being bored or wanting to play, he just would attack. And I had to work very carefully with him to break him of that habit, obviously, because it's so dangerous. And I can speak from experience that both my partner Sam and I have both been to the hospital from a cat bite. So it's definitely something you don't want to just ignore.
Did you wait until it got really bad before you went, or did you go proactively?
Well, what happened was Sam didn't realize he'd been bitten because in his situation, he was reaching into a crate to get a very skittish cat out of it and put into a cat carrier because we were at an adoption event. And the cat went nuts, and even though Sam had gloves that went all the way up past his elbow, the cat clawed him on his shoulder and bit him, but he didn't realize it for 4 days.
Oh,
and he came home from work and said, "I don't feel good." And the first thing I said was, "Take your shirt off." And I looked, and the wound was huge, red, boiling hot, very irregular shaped under the skin. And I said, "We've got to get to the emergency room right now." And he was on an IV antibiotic for 4 days, and the doctors were saying they were concerned that the Pasteurella infection was going to spread to his heart. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
So I guess you can't be more dramatic than that, huh, Sally? Well,
nope.
I mean,
what
did you ever get that cat adopted? Isn't there a cat in life that just needs to be back out on the street? Holy cow.
No, she actually, it wasn't her fault. And you were just talking about how cats are just being cats. She was in a situation we shouldn't have put her in the first place. And she was very frightened, and we didn't handle it properly. And the reason why I went to the ER was the same thing. It was actually a sibling to this cat, and I needed to take him to the vet, and I tried to put him in a cat carrier, and I didn't handle it appropriately, and he flipped out, and he bit me right through my hand. And I knew I had to go to the doctor, so I went right away.
Good. That was smart. So, Sally, this is, I'm sure, something that this wouldn't be something that someone would come to the O'Call Clinic about, because they, if they're like Robin, they say, look, I pushed that cat beyond its limit. But what sort of advice, Sally, do you have for people, especially like Robin in rescue, about, you know, I don't know, I guess once bitten, twice shy. I guess that helps, right?
I think what can help the most is, first of all, for every volunteer to learn kind of a repertoire of at least two or three different ways to, you know, confine a cat. Not, in other words, that we're not only going to try to say put him in a plastic hard shell cat carrier, because some of these cats really, A, they don't like the carrier. They've had bad, you know, going in the hard shell carrier meant going to the vet, going to a spay neuter program, you know, day, and it was very stressful for them, or, you know, painful, et cetera. And so when they see the carrier, they get in the carrier, now they're really anxious in that carrier, and then it's very difficult to try to get them out, because they know coming out actually means worse. It's not like out means good. Or they're feeling, well, gosh, at least if I'm in here, you know, all the badness is not as bad, but they freak out, as you said. So what are alternatives? And that is, I would strongly recommend using things like a pillowcase. And I've got a video on my website. Yep, I've got a video on my YouTube channel and my Dr. Sally J. Foote website, or the link's through there anyway, where you just take a regular pillowcase, and especially if you pre-spray the pillowcase with Feel-Away.
Then we
can slip that over the cat, and what, like a feral kind of, you know, a cat who doesn't like to be touched. Okay, a lot of these cats, they don't want to be touched at all. Every time they've ever been touched, it's been nasty stuff that happened from human hands. So any kind of touching, you know, they're like, whoa, you know, they're going to react to. So what I do is we'll put down a plate of tuna, and, you know, when they're hungry, and we're going to use hunger as a tool. So like maybe you know, put down a little plate of tuna, the cat's eating the tuna, and now we're just going to slip that pillowcase over them. I don't care if I get the plate of tuna in the pillowcase, you know, honestly. We got to be safe. And if you slip it over, these cats will go right in the pillowcase. It's like if they're going to want to run, they run into the pillowcase. Then we hold it shut and not it shut. They can breathe through the pillowcase.
Right.
Many cats are even, they're not too big, you know, or too heavy that the pillowcase is going to rip. And oftentimes they actually feel a lot more comforted in the pillowcase. Or let's put it this way, they're way less reactive. Then you get to the, whatever, veterinary clinic or wherever you've got to transport them to. If you need to get them out, we can be pretty careful. If their cat's like, you could tell really, oh, he's really upset, I can give that cat an injection of a sedative through the pillowcase. And I'm not going to get bitten. And my staff's not going to get bitten. Now when the cat's sleepy, all right, then they're going to be safer to handle. And actually from the pet's perspective, they're not as afraid.
I love it.
You know, it's just like if you're scared to death to go to the dentist to get that root canal, right? And you are just shaking and your heart's palpating and you're, you know, whoa, you can start gagging and choking, and that would be horrible. If your dentist, they give you Valium. Or they just say, here, take they slightly anesthetize you, whatever, get you pretty sedate with nitrous.
Yep.
And the purpose of that is not only make you easier to work on, you don't remember your fear.
And then actually
become less fearful. So now it's easier to walk in that dentist, even if they still give you the nitrous. And let's say even this kitty still needs a little, you know, happy juice, let's call it.
Yes.
You know, we're better off. So the pillowcase enables us to be able to even give them the chemical restraint we might need to do. I've had times where I've just told some people, just use a laundry basket. You know, if that cat's eating the tuna and we don't have a pillowcase, or, oh, we don't know if it's going to work, we can put like a laundry basket over the cat eating.
Okay.
Might be a little upset. Kitty will settle down. And then if we can take a slim piece of some kind of like, oh, almost like plexiglass, you know, just a firm thing. And now I can slide it underneath the laundry basket.
Or even like a cookie sheet, depending on the size of the laundry basket or the cat.
This makes my top, and then I can rotate the thing over and I can bungee cord it shut. The point is that the cat is not going to be as, and then we don't have to do all the reaching in to try to get the cat.
Right.
Because now
right.
when it comes time for us to get the cat kind of out of there at the vet clinic, we can slightly slide the cookie sheet back and then, you know, maybe use a towel to handle. It just gives us more flexibility
right.
with how to approach
right.
this animal. Or if it's like the cat's really flipping out, we can still give an injection through the holes in the laundry basket. So going back to what can we do if we're in the shelters or the rescue groups, have a couple train up people, and you can like go to my website or there may be some others, and having, okay, we've got a couple different choices here on how we handle these cats.
Let me just interrupt because we have to go to a break, and I want to make sure that I give your website correctly and keep Robin on the line. It's Dr. Sally J, the letter J, Foot with an E on the end, .com. And a lot of these cool things she's talking about are on there. Save the thought, hold the thought, what we can do in the shelters and rescues. Everybody just hold your horses or your kitty cats, and we'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Waruva, a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility. So it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feelaway diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who've just left their litters. Look for Feelaway and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. I am back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hotchner. And my veterinarian co-host tonight is the wonderful Dr. Sally J. Foot with an E on the end, which happens to be the name of her website, where she has videos and all kinds of tips and information and blogs and a big, big mountain of information. Sally, you were going to talk about, handling if Robin in her small rescue or in a shelter is taking in a cat that you're not sure how it's going to react to a hard clamshell carrier, and they tend to react very poorly to it, because even if they might go in, you've seen people shoving them in from behind like a horse being pushed in the gate at Pimlico Racetrack. Getting them out is where we have the cat bite danger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, you know, as a rule, if a cat's sitting there in the back of the carrier, never reach in for them. You should just gently lift and tip the kitty out of the carrier. And if they're, like, breaking with all four paws, what we do is we just take the carrier apart. Because reaching in is really creating a lot more of that anxiety. And what the cat does is the cat freezes. And when the cat is, like, sitting there crouched and not moving, not growling, not doing anything actually, that's when they're getting the most heightened with their fear. And because cats will only really vocalize, like start, you know, screeching at you and howling or growling when they're at the tippy top of their aggression. And so when they're like, you know, really cowering in the back and hunkered down and frozen, then if we're reaching in for them, you know, we're really increasing that fear and anxiety, where then the only thing that they have to turn to is their aggression. So if we can, and I know we have to get them out of there. So if we can be creative and find ways to get them out of the carrier, that's a little bit more with kind of being, you know, having them do it on their own or not be reaching in, you know, not closing that space, et cetera, that can help to reduce it, you know, reduce the likelihood of aggressing on you. Some cats know what leather gloves mean, and sometimes the sight of the leather gloves will trigger them to aggress more. And I've had a lot of cats bite through x-ray gloves and leather gloves. I never feel real confident with that. So there's toweling techniques through Dr. Sophia Yin's book that I think are really great for all shelter and, you know, rescue people to learn how to do in different ways to, like, you know, gently tipping. Don't shake them out like a salt shaker. You know, you just gently lift the back end. I think of like a dump truck, you know, like a gentle dump truck. Gently lifting it up,
remember,
and the cat will come out slowly and let them walk out on their own. You got to be patient with cats.
The shaking out like a salt shaker is really can be embarrassing if it happens on television. When I had my show Cat Chat for many years on the Martha Stewart channel of SiriusXM, at one point she invited all of the guests, all of the co-hosts of the show. She had pet programming every night. Three of us are here on the Radio Pet Lady Network. I have Dr. Sean, the natural vet, on with me on Tuesday, and Greg Cleva with It's a Dog's Life on Thursday. And we were all there. And one of the things that was going to be done was show off some different kinds of cats, including two that she had just adopted from the Animal Rescue Fund of the Hamptons the previous day. So she had them brought in a, I mean, the last thing you want to do is, like, you know, the poor things. They were already in shock, right? So they were long-haired Persians. Persians is what she likes. And I was told I was to hold the cat. And they were trying to sort of catch the cat beforehand. They were letting it run loose, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. But somebody grabbed it and shoved it in this clamshell. And the camera was on it. And, of course, the thing didn't want to come out. Can you blame it? And she turned it upside down. First, she did it gently, and then she turned it upside down and shook it like a salt shaker. I thought, I can't believe we're doing this on national television. And then guess who got to hold the cat? Yours truly. And it scratched me, I mean, to the point of almost scarring me. It was terrified. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that was not the cat to be bringing out in that situation. But I can certainly say that taking the top off the clamshell would have been a lot smarter, or just don't make the poor thing come out, right? Interesting about the leather gloves. See, I'm thinking, wow. So Sam had gloves all the way past his elbow. How amazing that the cat was able to find a place beyond that. So you're saying that cat had probably been handled by someone in trap, neuter, spay, or some kind of a rescue situation where the person had already had that protection on and frightened the cat?
It could be, right. It's very likely, or just the sight of those look different. I don't know what, you know, the speakers are somewhere.
Get out. And his arm was in the way. That was really it. But I just thought I could add a few other tips that we do with cats that are having trouble when we get to the vet. One thing I'm really sensitive about is cats always feel safer in a small, dark place. So even though I know I'm going to let them out into an exam room, I ask the vet if we can turn the lights either off or as low as possible.
Yeah.
And then we also allow the cat to come out of the cat carrier, even if we have to tip it gently. I have a towel on the exam table and then a towel that we can cover the cat with. So the cat is going to go towards the dark place and want to come out. And we're also careful about sounds, and we keep it as quiet as we can. So the vet doesn't talk loudly. The techs don't make a lot of banging noises. And we find that the cats are a lot more receptive to being handled.
That's really nice, because one of Dr. Sally's specialties is gentle handling. Sally, this is like your bailiwick, right?
Right, absolutely. Everything she has mentioned is spot on. That's absolutely right. And this is where the handling techniques and veterinary practices is slowly changing, you know, to what you have just described. And if it's not the veterinary staff themselves initiating it, I love it when clients themselves, you know, make the suggestion or say, hey, let's, you know, turn the lights down, or my kitty, I'm aware that they like it better when it's, like, especially quieter, like you said, and darker, and allow the cat to come out. Give him a few minutes to walk around the room and sniff and rub up against some things or what have you. You know, just let them kind of acclimate to where they are for a few minutes. And, so, you know, the more that people who are active in, like, rescue shelter work that are also doing these very same things, and not only will help them when they're doing, you know, rescue adoption events, et cetera, it also will help a lot for them to take the lead in helping to change, you know, what happens in the veterinary and the veterinary visit. Besides, you know, I'm doing some speaking to the veterinarians and so forth. But, yeah, for the cats, it, you know, we need to handle them in a much more quieter and much less stimulating way, you know.
And just have that sensitivity that Robin obviously has gathered from years of doing it. And, you know, it takes a little more time. It's like so many of these things that, you know, if you have 15 minutes scheduled per patient and you're already running a little behind, you can imagine how your average vet who's maybe not cat-centric and isn't really thinking what is this experience like for the kitty might just be, let's get on with it, right? I mean, not in a rude way or a mean way, just that little moment of not thinking from the cat's point of view.
Yeah, initially it will take a bit more time, but in the end, like after one or two visits where it's been a lot more, you know, positive for the cat, and of course that's always positive for your client and your staff as well,
right,
you'll find it takes a lot less time. Because what my staff will do is as soon as the client would get in the room, most of them still use a hard shell carrier, but the cats are used to when they come out, you know, getting rewarded or being able to come out more calmly, they'll immediately just open the carrier door on the floor and we close the door of the exam room. So now the cat can come out on its own while they're getting the history, you know.
Nice.
And they learn to weigh the cat in the carrier and then take the cat out and then weigh the carrier. That's a less stressful way to weigh the cat. So we have it like kind of down to just a protocol and a system where we stay on like a 20, you know, honestly, I think 15 minutes is kind of too short for your pet at the vet. But anyway,
I think my vet scheduled 15 minutes, but she's never given me less than 30. So that tells you something.
But anyway, so we get it right down to a regular, you know, routine. That is, they greet the client, they get a little initial history, they're immediately weighing the cat in the carrier. Because I'm in a small solo practice, so my scale is out in the waiting room because it makes it convenient for the dogs, and it's not so
right.
Bad this way with the cats. And then they come back out and they weigh the carrier with everything, you know, that was in it with the cat, and we'll take the difference. So we still get a pretty accurate weight that way on the cat, and it's a lot less stressful for the cat. So meanwhile, while they're getting a little more history and, you know, the story from the client, the cat is getting acclimated to the room, or the cat might be up on the exam table with the carrier. We're throwing some treats in the carrier, so they're getting a little bit of rewarding and such. And then when it's time to get the kitty out, if the cat has not come out on its own, we immediately take the carrier apart, which we've gotten really quick at that. So it's just like anything in life, you know, initially, yes it does take time, but that time investment ends up having it taking a lot less time. And then you get to do a better physical exam and be able to really help your client, you know, give the best care for their cat. You get to ask more questions about, you know, what's really on your mind and what's affecting, you know, your pet cat. And you are right, though, there are some clinics that may not really want to make these changes. So I tell people out there, you're the customer, you know.
That's right.
Ask those clinics, do you use low stress handling techniques with cats?
In fact, someone like Robin comes in and says, here's my wish list, please. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Robin, you not only are making it better for those cats, but you're teaching and training the vet and his or her techs if, in fact, they're not already thinking that way. Right?
Right. Well, and they weren't really thinking that way. And now they understand that some cats, I'm going to say, please turn the lights down, put me in the room that has a window in it, and that's enough light. And also, I am more than willing to wait. So if we bring a cat in and the cat ends up being a little bit more fractious or frightened, I'll just say, go to your next appointment, and I'll just wait, and we'll flip. And that person can go a little early, and we'll just wait another 15 minutes until the cat calms down.
Smart. Right. Smart. Yeah. Really, really smart. Yeah. This is very cool stuff. Robin, we're so glad to have you as a special friend of the show. You've always got something to share and to add and to just enrich the conversation. Can't wait to read some of your blogs uncovered in cat hair about blog posts. I'm sure it'll be great. So thank you so much. Really love having you here. We've got to go off for another break. When we get back, I'm here with Dr. Sally J. Foote, and we're going to talk about bite prevention. We might even talk about dogs, because those of you with cats may often be around dogs. It just happens. We'll be right back. Support for this show comes from VaxaCheck. Are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxiCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxiCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy, inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Catatrack litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief Litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We are back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hotchner, and my wonderful veterinary co-host tonight is Dr. Sally J. Foote from the Okaw Clinic in Tuscola, Illinois. Sally, it's Dog Bite Prevention Week, but we're going to make pretend it's just Bite Prevention Week. Because I think you have so much still to add about cat bites. I feel like we've only, excuse the expression, scratched the surface. One of the things you said early on was the subtle signs that a cat will give you that they're going to bite. Now, you and I, you have the degree. I just have the book learning and whatever, you know, personal experience. We know that dogs 99% of the time give you lots of indication that they need you to leave them alone, basically, and the bite only comes later, unless you're breaking up a dog fight, which really has nothing to do with the person. It has to do with two dogs. Mm-hmm. But with a cat, and so all those warnings, you know, we can tell people all of them. They're in the dog Bible. For the Humane Society of the United States, they made all these great bookmarks for children called Teach Kids to Read Dogs, not to read with them, but to read their bodies. But mm-hmm. What do we do about cats? I mean, people are always – I often would get phone calls on Cat Chat of people saying, well, I was just on the couch with my cat patting her, and she's like a psycho cat. She just turns and bites me. I'm like, how long were you patting her? Did she wave the tip of her tail? Did she flatten her ears? Did she get rigid? Did she make any sound? So those are the subtle but recognizable sort of triggers that – or not triggers, signs that the cat is working her way up to being aggressive. Is there something else that people can be on the lookout for?
Sure there is. I think some of the things that people miss is the early signs that the cat is either, you know, anxious, trying to avoid whatever is, you know, in their environment that's making them tense. Because most all aggression is actually due to fear. While we, the humans, are not seeing it, we have to learn how to look at life through our cat's eyes.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter that we don't think that they should be afraid or feel tense about, say, children in the room or, you know, another cat added to the home or that there is a storm approaching. The fact is if your cat's showing some of these signs, which are the early signs of fear and anxiety, the cat is this way they're acting is to try to get away from it. And then if they can't get away from it, and they cannot, it's still coming at them, and they cannot find a way to hide or to leave from it, then the cat has to choose to use its tools, meaning its teeth, to say, I want you to go away. I want this to go away. Okay, aggression is always to try to control their environment. So back to, you know, what are the early signs of fear in a cat? Well, the first thing for the cat, remember that the cat, when it feels threatened, might be somebody's lunch. So the cat wants to find somewhere to hide because it back out in the wild, you know, if they felt a threat, that's what would keep them the safest. But they don't want to feel trapped. If they were stuck in their hiding place with no other way to kind of climb up higher, say, the tree, or scurry through the bushes. So they want to place. So when they are, like, in the corner against the wall because, say, your two-year-old, it keeps running after them, what they're going to show is, first of all, that they're running away.
Right.
So if they keep turning away, they move away, they do not sit next to you, they get up and they change their position. That's the first thing that the cat's saying, I really don't want to be this close. So don't keep getting closer to them.
Yes.
Second of all, if they keep looking around, you know, they're constantly like kind of looking and looking at this and kind of paying attention, being, the term is vigilant. That too
yes.
is saying, I'm just not real relaxed here. I'm on my radar's up. I'm not
right.
quite sure if I like it, so I'm just kind of not sure. Then their ears may tend to turn back, not when they're flattened. When they're flattened, they're high up on that. I'm
okay.
mad, I'm upset. But when they're first turning backward and holding them kind of like backward, that is saying to, it's like a person frowning. It's like saying, no, don't really want this.
Right.
I really am not too sure. You know, could you please stop touching me? Could you not be so close to me? You know, that's what
right.
the cat's saying. That tail flicking, that it's low and it's just that little bit of a flick, flick, flick. That cat is not wagging its tail.
Right.
It's saying, I just am not really liking what's happened here, folks. And then with the, especially at that point where they're flicking, excuse me, of the tail, they tend to be making their body small, kind of crouched down. They've
right.
got themselves all hunkered down, and then they tend to be like frozen, meaning they're just sitting there absolutely still.
Right.
And they're just sitting absolutely still because they're trying to figure, should I run or should I just stay put and be super quiet and they'll leave me alone? They're making
right.
that decision. So if there's any more touch, any closer approach, then they shift over to, okay, staying small is not working. Now I'm going to lunge out. Now I'm going to bite you. Now I'm going to scratch you. So this is where people have missed all that
That's
you
right.
know, early signs beforehand. They didn't understand what it meant, okay? It's not, I don't know if they pay attention. Some don't pay attention, but some of them just think, well, he's just being quiet. Look, he's being still. No, he's frozen. He's scared to death.
Right.
You know? And
right.
So this is what's hard for people to grasp. But if you can relate that as you are petting, and after three strokes, now he starts flicking his tail, please stop, just stop. He's saying, I don't want to be touched any more than that. Because if you touch him a fourth and fifth time, now he has to try to bite you to get you to stop. Because he didn't
because
listen
to pushed what he told him, you. Pushed him past his limit of
exactly.
of comfort, of acceptability.
Right.
One of the things that cats have done with me that I've never quite gotten is they roll over and they give you their tummy. Now, when a dog does that, it's super vulnerable and saying, first of all, I happen to love belly rubs, me personally, this cat or that dog, but it's also the most vulnerable position. So you stroke their tummy because it appears to me, maybe I'm wrong, that that's what they want. And the cat will accept it. I've never known a cat to accept it more than for a little bit. And then they grasp on with all four mm-hmm. claws and
right.
even will bite. I'm like, well, why'd you give me your stomach then? So what's that all about?
Actually, dogs can do the same thing. A dog can aggress on you when they've shown you their tummy. It is like a bit of it's a slightly ambivalent posture. In other words, it's kind of like this cat saying, okay, I'm rolling over to be a little bit like vulnerable, but really for me, for it being a cat, I'm also positioning myself to make it very easy to kick you off if you touch me. Like I'm trying to make myself absolutely smallest, so please leave me alone a little bit. And maybe they'll tolerate one or two touches, but that's why
yes.
that third touch, they're just
yes.
like, no, and they go into, actually, it's like when they've killed something, that's
yes.
the easiest way to really grab on and like, stop this, like, kill your hand.
Yes.
Sorry, but that's basically
no, but it's
doing.
True, and you
but a
feel
dog
that way.
Same thing. A dog can do the same thing. A lot of times a dog, when they roll down their side, if you watch them very carefully, if they're not totally stretched out, relaxed, like when they're sleeping, wanting the belly rubbed, and they kind of have their paw raised and their head half raised, they're in an ambivalent body language. They're like, I'm kind of submitting to you, but I'm also ready to possibly reach up and bite you as well. So that is when a dog or cat rolls on their side, I just tell people, don't touch them. Get them to sit up, come to me, and now I'll pet you on your head.
I
I'll pet
see.
You in the right area. I don't think it's good to go and do this, you know, unless we really have the total picture looking really good with either the dog or the cat.
That's
what
good advice because I because that's one that always baffled me. It seemed as if it was an invitation, and to not give the belly not a rough rub, but even like a gentle one, would be to kind of diss them, to not accept their invitation. But it's not an invitation. Now, if you know your own dogs crazy well, I have one dog out of three that would only place she most adores to be rubbed is her belly, just stroked. The other two would rather any, they're Weimaraners. Any place is good, the more the better. In any body position, there's no amount of touch that's too much, no amount of touch that's not welcome. You're asleep, you're awake, you've got any kind of position. Their head up is usually like, why haven't you patted me yet? But with the girl in the dog, it's going to only be the belly, and she makes it really clear. But I've never had a kitty who really wanted their belly rubbed. Well, maybe one, but it's unusual. You're saying that's quite normal to not want your tummy rubbed, and that's something that people and their kids should know is actually an off-limits area, kind of. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I would. I would say that. I was, you know, with the cat, it's pretty universal with the cat. When they come up to you and they rub their head on you, they are saying, hi, please pat me and pet me here.
Right.
Between the ears, over the back of the head, down the face of my neck.
I see.
That is like universal handshake for the cat. And especially when the cat has come to you and done that hen bunting, he's giving you what I call the kitty handshake.
Nice.
Now, then we're on the body. Let's just say the cat didn't do that, but he's resting comfortably, and the child wants to pet the cat, and the owner's there, and the owner can see, yes, this cat is tolerant or is going to be okay. Where should our child pet the cat? From the base of the neck only to maybe halfway down the rib cage. We're only going to go about 5 inches, right, period. Cats kind of have a body map, and that means from, you know, the point of the base of the neck all the way to the tip of the tail, think of it like a map. And it's up to this particular cat how far along this map I like being
petted,
and how far to continue along is really arousing, over-arousing to me, gets me kind of worked up, or I don't like it.
Yes.
And so that's particular to the cat. So on a cat we don't know, the majority of all cats do pretty well with from the base of the neck to just a couple inches beyond, and that's all you want to do. All right?
That
we don't want to find out.
Yeah, no, that is really great advice. I love that idea of a body map. We have another last quick break, and then we'll wind up with some of this. I think we're going to be preventing a lot of bites this week. I'm hoping we will. We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. And also, you can get $5 off a first-time order by putting Dog Talk 5, even if it's for cats, Dog Talk 5 in the code box at checkout. Little something extra for our cat crazy listeners. Sally, when you were at the school talking to these kids, had many of them, you may not have got into body parts, but do you think that most of them in terms of dogs had been bitten in the face?
I really, you know, it was a big school assembly, so I really couldn't particularly ask, you know, these children. But based from what, you know, other parents and kind of friends, et cetera, when they have a child who gets bitten and needs doctor attention, the majority are getting bitten up or near the face or on the hand and forearm. That's where it's at. And that is because the child is, and this is the most common way kids, you know, get, or people too, but it's mostly our children anyway, are getting bitten because they are approaching the dog. The dog is like still not moving, and the dog is near, say, their food, near their bed. The dog is sleeping, or by a toy. And the dog, for in the dog world, you know, to a dog, what's mine is mine. It's not yours. And even if the, and so the dog may be getting tense and nervous, and the child keeps approaching, and the child gets their face right up to the dog. And so then the dog is trying to pull away, cannot. And so then they resort, you know, to biting because it's their way to say, I really want you to let me go. And so because the child's face is so nearby, that's where they will get the child in the face. Or the dog has lunged, you know, and jumped up, and the child is shorter so that the dog isn't getting them, you know. And like you said with the doctor with the noses, noses being bitten off, that too is why, because it's right there to the front of the face. It's easy to grab the nose, and the nose is soft and with cartilage. And that's why, yeah, they can just chomp right through that. So, you know, with the children, what we teach them to do is, and of course this is with like the straying dogs, but the first thing we teach them to do is leave them alone.
Right.
You know, you have to ask two questions on any pet known, like your neighbor, or your friends. I don't care. Anytime you go up to them, and it, you know, you still have to ask, does this pet like to be petted? Not all dogs want to be petted. My own
I have a problem with that, Sally, because I find that people, even if they've taught the child to do it, it's sort of like that person who puts on their indicator blinker, they're going to turn left right when they're turning left, not as a warning before they turn left. It's like too late to ask. Their children go, can I pat your dog, while they're patting them.
Well, that's
in other words, they haven't really gotten the information because their parents, it's almost like saying, may I please? It's just a polite thing to do is what they've been taught, not it's a safety thing.
Well, what I tell the kids is you can't touch the dogs till you ask that, because the second question is, can I pet your dog?
Oh,
I see. Even though they may, so the first one is just to even become aware that some dogs don't like to be petted. Then the second one is, can I do this now? Because I said, that answer may be no. My dog had ear surgery yesterday. No, you can't pet him today. Maybe he likes it, but not today. I said, you have to ask. And then only from the shoulders, like the neck, halfway down the back as well on the dog.
Similar,
no reaching over the head.
That same body map.
Right. Now, you know, not everybody's going to do that, of course, no matter how well you teach them. But I tell them there's two questions. You have to ask both. You cannot touch the animal till you do this. And, you know, that does, at least from what they acknowledge in the school assembly, seems to kind of stick. But I think really getting across to people this concept of not every dog likes to be petted, just like every human doesn't like to be hugged.
Kissed.
Exactly, you're kissed. And while maybe I usually like to be hugged, today with my sunburn is not a day to hug me.
No, that's extremely well put. And then there's the other part of it. Which is when I'm sure as a vet you've heard this, but I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have heard this in a dog park or a vet tech where someone says, is your dog friendly? And you often are asking it vis-a-vis your own dog. Is your dog going to be friendly to my dog? But even could be, is your dog friendly? And the person says, yeah. And then some bite happens and they say, gosh, he hasn't done that in a long time. Like, hello. Yeah. You mean your dog ever bit somebody before? That's not okay. So that's the other thing, is people are often in denial and not totally honest because they don't want to think that they have a biting dog. So their answer is, yeah, my dog's fine, because they've justified some previous bite. Well, it wasn't really his fault and this happened. I mean, when you mentioned the dog bed, I had such a – it's heartbreaking when you put down the law and you've made the rules and then – people don't follow them. And these children were not 4 years old. You know, my godson Max, I think, was 7 or 8. And I said, don't go near Lulu when she's on her bed. Do not get on her bed with her. He wanted to snuggle on her bed with her. I said, don't do it. It's her bed. Right. And especially when she's sleeping or awake, stay away. And then there was a power outage. And for some reason, during that power outage and the alarm going off, he somehow got on her bed and he got bitten on the lip. Now, it was a nick. But still, you feel terrible as the dog owner.
Absolutely.
It's like, told you. Don't feel any better about it, though. You know, thank God it was really just a nick. But you kind of then think, well, now has my dog learned to bite people? You know, the dog had never been pushed to that limit before. I didn't have her around kids. So that's the other thing, is you sort of want to protect your dog. from being in a situation where they're pushed to that limit, because now they're called a bad dog and they're like going to go to dog jail, kind of, right?
Right. I think it's good for people to have setups for safety and see that as not a failure on your dog. So in other words, let's say, you know, you have your now 9, 10, or 12-year-old child who sometimes doesn't want to do as you ask of them because starting to push those adolescent buttons.
Good point.
And you're going, great, I have my 12-year-old golden retriever with hip dysplasia that has a hard time getting up and getting away.
Yes.
And my, whatever, son or nephew or daughter, whatever, is still going to be doing cartwheels right by him in the living room and won't stop. So I am going to put the dog up, and that's okay, and that's good.
It's all good. Sally, this has been great. The hour flew by. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for the new show, The Pet Cancer Vet with Dr. Sue Ettinger. You're going to love it. Dr. Sally, tell me you'll come back. It's so great to spend time with you.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Have a great evening, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Bye for now.